Hello and welcome to the Illinois Radio Reader. I'm Janelle Eckerman, and today I'll be reading a selection of articles from the News Gazette for Wednesday, April 22, 2026. I'll begin with the front page, and the main article is Illinois Solar Decathlon, Beacon of Hope. UI students donating house designed for now cancelled contest to Habitat for Humanity. And the article is written by Jana Wiesemer. Rantoul. Students with the Illinois Solar Decathlon spent more than 2 years designing a new net zero home to be built in Rantoul, said Ishana Jan, president of the University of Illinois Club and non-profit. However, the club was hit with a curveball along the way, the cancellation of the national contest they had planned to enter the project in. We were obviously disheartened by the competition being called off, Jane said. But I think we decided as a team that we've worked on it for so long and we've been so passionate about this project that we decided to continue. Construction of the building Energy Efficient, Affordable Community-Oriented Neighbourhoods Beacon Home is expected to be completed in June, said student and project manager Etienne Siroy. The house will be donated to Habitat for Humanity of Champaign County. The project is totally student-led, Jane said. According to Siroy, this included researching available properties at the front end of the project. A lot of our design teams, through architecture and site development, work on getting ideas of what we could build, he said. It then moves more into design development, so working with our engineering teams to get more hands-on experience. Again, this is all student involvement, so it's students from across civil works, civil engineering, mechanical engineering, and so they move through design development, eventually to construction documentation and the permit set. And this article is then continued onto page A10. Those documents were then handed off to Broyren Russo Builders, which is the construction manager and general contractor on the project. The company also had input on the design and secured bids for subcontractors, Siroy said. Students acted as interns during the bidding process and have been conducting weekly site visits during the construction phase. It's really amazing what the students have done, said Nathaniel Kachurian, project manager of Broyren Russo and part of the team working with the students on this project. So we stepped in to help with initial pre-construction efforts. Generally, our role is construction management oversight, guiding the students along the path of what would work for their design in this particular market. The project broke ground in January 2026, Kachurian told the News Gazette. Getting a finalised design that fit within the budget did take the better part of 2025, he said. As construction continues on the home, work is currently being done on interior components such as electrical, mechanical and plumbing, Siroy said in mid-April. According to the club's website, the home will be all electric and have 3 bedrooms and 2 bathrooms. Home buyer applications with Habitat for Humanity of Champaign County for this residence closed Tuesday. Prospective homeowners must make 60% of the area median income or less to be eligible to purchase the property, said Executive Director Chad Hoffman. The house will have a 0% interest mortgage. He added that the organisation also provides education about home ownership. Our homeowners do put in 300 hours of service, some of that on the financial education training side, but some of that also on our restore, and then also on the house builds to get them ready for home ownership, Hoffman said. Per the organisation's website, applicants must also demonstrate a genuine need for adequate housing and the ability to pay for the initial down payment, low-cost monthly mortgage payments, homeowners insurance, and moving costs. The home is currently estimated to cost about $350,000, Jane said. We're going to make it as affordable as possible, she said, and it's a little more expensive than the typical Habitat builds. But we're looking at the long-term perspective, and currently utility bills are starting to get really expensive, So by making this all electric and net zero and having solar panels, this will help reduce the costs in the long run. Student Vijay Barumbe, solar and electric lead, said that solar panels were donated to the project by Silfab Solar and will help the home become net zero in terms of energy consumption. Surplus energy generated by the panels during the day will be provided to the grid in exchange for credits, which will in turn power the home at night, he explained. The sustainability aspect and the quality is very high, said student Amrit Agarwal, construction management lead. According to Jane, the club had previously planned to enter the Beacon project in the US Department of Energy's Solar Decathlon 2025 Build Challenge. We learned in May of 2024 that the competition has been indefinitely cancelled and that more information would be provided later, she said, but we've not gotten any updates since. The DOE has rebranded the Solar Decathlon as the building's next student design competition, describing it as a contest that calls on students to design high-performance buildings that improve our quality of life through greater affordability, resilience and energy efficiency. The winners are those teams that best blend architectural and engineering excellence with innovation, the DOE's website states. The cancellation of the build challenge meant that the team couldn't use the DOE's name to provide credibility to the project or access funding and educational resources previously available through the department, Jane said. It was a lot of work getting the funding approved and getting faculty to be on our side with this project, and then also talking to our sponsors to get them to be on our side and collaborate on this project with us despite not having the Department of Energy backing us, she told the News Gazette. So having Habitat back us was actually immensely helpful. The local Habitat for Humanity chapter was able to work with its state support organisation to secure $30,000 for the project, Hoffman said. According to Agarwal, the main funding source for the project was UI's Student Sustainability Committee. Money was also raised through various UI departments, and the club was able to secure material donations from sponsors. Couturier said it's a great testament to the students that were able to pull together the funding to make this project work, and he's enjoyed getting to collaborate with them. We were thrilled at the opportunity to partner with them and give them a glimpse into what construction actually looks like in the field, he said. Personally, I get a lot out of just coaching, guiding, and sort of giving back in that way. Students also see the project as a win-win. As students, we get experience working in the field while also giving back to the community, Barumbe said. Jane said that the club hopes to build two more houses near Beacon and aims to rejuvenate and revitalise the entire neighbourhood, not just one home. At the end of the day, it just feels good to know that something that we worked on is going to be used for good, said student Agnes Tamatiku, who is part of the club's construction management team. According to Hoffman, this is Habitat for Humanity of Champaign County's third partnership with the Illinois Solar Decathlon. It's great when young individuals see a purpose and take action and make a change, he said. I mean, this is transforming someone's life. And my apologies for any mispronunciations. And the next article from the front page is New trial for former UI officer starts soon. Previous conviction overturned on appeal. And the article is written by Luke Taylor. Urbana. A former University of Illinois police officer who was convicted of official misconduct then saw that verdict overturned will return to court next week for a new trial. Gerald Jerry Sandage, aged 54, of Leroy, appeared in court Tuesday for a hearing on pre-trial motions regarding admission of evidence at the upcoming new trial. In 2022, Sandage was found guilty of 7 counts of official misconduct, alleging he used computer systems available only to police to obtain information unrelated to police work on seven women, as well as two men associated with two of these women. And the article is then continued onto page A10. Champaign County Judge Roger Weber made that ruling in a stipulated bench trial. Last year, an Illinois appeals court overturned the conviction, ruling that evidence used against Sandage was improperly obtained. Weber had held a hearing on evidence suppression prior to the trial and ruled that authorities conducted a lawful search, but the appeals court disagreed. Authorities obtained a search warrant for Sandage's electronic equipment, including his cell phone, after an unidentified woman filed a complaint in 2018 saying that Sandage had drugged and sexually assaulted her. While searching for evidence related to that alleged assault, investigators found information that Sandage had been making illegal computer searches. As more evidence came to light, two criminal cases developed. One included the charges alleging official misconduct. The other accused Sandage of a series of sexual assaults on women whom he allegedly drugged. Despite being released from a prison sentence when the misconduct conviction was overturned, Sandage has remained in the Champaign County Jail as he awaits trial for the sexual assault charges. The upcoming trial, scheduled for Monday, is regarding the latter charges. However, evidence pertinent to those charges was sourced from the same searches that the appeals court deemed were not lawful. Assistant State's Attorney Troy Lazar argued that the evidence should be admissible, while Sandage's attorney James Martinkus said the search warrants allowing police to look into his client's phone were too broad. Martinkus highlighted the appeals court decision from the other case. After a hearing on the issue Tuesday morning, Weber said he wanted the rest of the day to consider the issue and would provide a written response rather than scheduling another hearing ahead of the quickly approaching trial. Final pre-trial discussions and jury selection are scheduled to begin Monday morning. And the last article from the front page is Teen Murder Suspect to be Tried as Adult, and the article is written by Luke Taylor. Urbana. A Champaign 15-year-old charged with first-degree murder in a shooting last month outside Marketplace Shopping Centre will be tried as an adult, a Champaign County judge ruled Tuesday. Braylon Vellon has been charged with four counts of first-degree murder in the March 21 fatal shooting, and that article continues onto page A10. At 15, he is a year younger than the age of which juveniles are automatically transferred to adult court for murder charges. Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz moved to transfer the case to adult court and brought Champaign Police Detective Lauren Hill to the stand to testify on the facts of the case. Judge Chad Beckett also viewed evidence obtained from Vellon's phone, including videos and photos of him displaying a variety of firearms, as well as a video of the shooting. Vellon also has a prior history in juvenile court, including services and supports provided to him while he was on juvenile probation, following a delinquency finding for possession of a stolen firearm. That finding stemmed from a September 26, 2024 incident in which Vellon was found to have stolen a firearm from the office at Arrowhead Lanes and transferred it to an unknown individual. In the shooting, police were called to Marketplace Mall just after 6 p.m. that Saturday for a report of a fight with shots fired in a parking lot outside Dick's House of Sport. Jalen Bailey, 16, was hit and taken to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead at 11:44 p.m. Police located Vellon after the shooting and originally took him into custody on charges of aggravated battery, but the charges were upgraded to murder after Mr. Bailey was pronounced dead. I'll now move on to page A2, and as always, with corrections. The News Gazette strives to present fair and accurate reporting and to correct any errors as promptly as possible. Corrections and clarifications for all sections run on this page. To report an error, please call 217 351 5252, then press 6 to reach the newsroom. And in area history on this day, in 1926, world-famous trap shooter Mark Ari of Champaign, who won a gold medal at the 1920 Olympic Games in Antwerp, Belgium, sued his wife Eula for divorce. He charged her with cruelty and claimed she forced him to make his own bed, cook his own meals, and wash his own laundry. He says she tried to shoot him in 1917 and attacked him with a butcher knife last September and again this February. Just last week, he says, she showed him a handful of bullets that she vowed to feed to him. In 1976 on this day, the Champaign City Council approved 4 subdivision applications unanimously with virtually no discussion. City Council observers say the applications might be indicative of a seasonal boom in local construction. The Council approved preliminary plans for the Round Barn South Subdivision, the Devonshire South Centre Second Subdivision, the LH French Subdivision and the South West Place Subdivision. And in 2011, on this day, Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz is working with Sheriff Dan Walsh to make sure landlords for the Cherry Orchard apartment complex obey a judge's order. Meanwhile, health officials were trying to find a place to stay for a family that was still living at the complex. On Monday, Champaign County Circuit Judge John Kennedy found the complex managers Bernard and Eduardo Ramos guilty of 4 counts of violating the Champaign County Public Health Ordinance, fined them and ordered the complex closed. And on Wednesday, people were still living there. And in international history, today's highlight. On April 22, 1889, the Oklahoma land rush began at noon as thousands of homesteaders staked claims to nearly 1.9 million acres of land that was formerly part of Indian Territory. And in Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of the Vice President, Jim Rosso. On Wednesdays, we'll introduce the students who make up Year 10 of High School Confidential, powered by Danville Area Community College. Today, Milford's Cammy Muling. Her love of sports started when she was 4, Cammy getting started with t-ball and basketball. All these years later, she's still playing 3 sports in high school, volleyball, basketball, softball, with no signs of slowing down. "It's super fun, but you have to make time for everything," she said. "I love all the sports I do and who I do them with, so it's worth it." Cammy is a class officer who also is involved in National Honor Society, Student Advisory Council and Yearbook. Friends follow her reports mostly on social media, while the school maintains a display to showcase her work. From Tiny Sheldon, population 965, "There isn't much, but the new Dollar General is pretty cool." Cammy is wrapping up her 2nd year as Milford's student reporter. A junior, she's already looking forward to Year 3 with the News Gazette and being able to spend 1 more year with my good friends and make it the best ever, she said. And my apologies for any mispronunciations. I'll now move on to page A8 in Our Communities, and the article is Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. Danville location shuttering, most employees shifting to remote work. And it's written by Jennifer Bailey. Danville, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, will be closing its call center facility in June, but local officials are happy to hear most employees are keeping their jobs, working fully from home. "They made the decision to close their brick and mortar location," said Vermilion Advantage Interim CEO Tracy Wolfelt. "Employees will be working from home. The business has been located off East Main Street and Lynch Road since 1985. According to a company statement, "As part of our ongoing efforts to support the growing needs of our business, some BCBSIL employees will shift from a partially remote work schedule to fully remote work. As a result, we are consolidating our physical footprint. We remain committed to our employees and the communities we serve, and will continue to work in collaboration with local partners to help create healthier communities. While Felt said some employees have jobs tied more to the facility who will not have remote opportunities, Vermilion Advantage officials say they are happy to work with any of the employees, share their resumes and assist them, including at Thursday's Career Expo at Danville Area Community College. And the next article is Mahomet Village Board. Utility fee increases proposed. And the article is written by Yana Wisema. Mahomet. The average Mahomet water and sewer customer would see their fees increase by $20 per month starting in May if a proposed utility rate hike is approved. The potential changes were discussed at the Village Board's study session Tuesday. No formal action was taken. The bottom line is we have to cover the cost, Village Administrator Patrick Brown told the News Gazette. The system can't lose money because the system is an independent system. The Village of Mahomet Water and Wastewater System is not a taxpayer-funded utility. It's user-funded utility, so we're running it like a business. Proposed changes would go into effect May 1 and include, but are not limited to, increasing the monthly water facility charge from $5 to $15, which is expected to generate an additional $375,000 in revenue per year. Increasing the sewer facility charge from $5 to $15, which is expected to generate an additional $360,000 per year. Keeping water rates for residents unchanged at 68 cents per 100 gallons. Keeping wastewater rates unchanged at $1.11 per 100 gallons. The $15 monthly water facility charge would apply to customers with a 3/4-inch meter. For customers with larger meters, that fee is $20 for a 1-inch meter, $25 for a 1.5-inch meter, and $35 for 2 inches or larger. It's estimated that an average water customer who uses 4,100 gallons per month would see their water bill increase from $32.88 to $42.88 due to the increased facility charge, Brown wrote in a memo to the board. The average wastewater bill is projected to grow from $50.51 to $60.51. The way we're looking at that now is that facility fee should kind of help maintain a lot of our basic fixed expenses that are going to be there whether you turn on your faucet or not, Brown told the News Gazette. The village also needs to be able to save some revenue for capital projects, such as completing items on the Water Utilities Master Plan, he said. Additionally, there have been replacement and maintenance needs on the wastewater side in recent years. The wastewater budget is looking really bad, Brown said. Almost to the point where I don't have any money to transfer into future projects, and that's not a good situation to be in. The proposed fee changes come after a comprehensive water and wastewater rate study conducted by Burns, Clancy and Associates. According to Brown, the firm was hired by the village in November 2024 and completed the study in January 2026. We have not done a full analysis for 20 years and it was long overdue, especially coming out of the high inflationary periods post-pandemic, he wrote. However, he added that the village's proposal is not identical to the firm's recommendations. Brown also noted that the village typically increased water rates on an annual basis in previous years, but held off while waiting on the study results, which is one of the reasons the proposed changes may seem higher than a normal year. If we had not paused our increases since 2023, we would likely be within $5 of what we are proposing now, he said in regards to the village's water rates and fees. This is a $10 increase per month after no increases since 2023, and revenues over 5 years increased just 30%, while expenses increased by 59%. Additionally, the study found that operation costs on the wastewater side increased 76% over the last 5 years, while revenue only grew by 15%. Brown estimated that if sewer rate increases had not been paused since 2023, we would likely be within $6 of what we are proposing right now. Brown also wrote that all utilities face rising costs each year due to factors such as inflation, more stringent regulations, and system upgrades. The Village Board study session agenda from Tuesday also included an ordinance amending city code to prohibit parking within 10 feet of a mailbox, a resolution supporting municipal authority for land use and zoning, and a resolution authorising Village President Jason Tompkins to sign a letter requesting that the county amend its nuisance ordinance to ban the burning of leaves within 1,000 feet of village boundaries. I'll now move on to page A10 and read the weather report. And today, the temperature 75 degrees and it'll be partly sunny. A 40% chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms in the morning. There'll be southwest winds from 10 to 15 miles per hour, and overnight becoming mostly clear, and there'll be south winds from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunrise will be at 6:05 a.m. and sunset at 7:39 p.m. And on Thursday, there'll be a high of 80 degrees with a low of 57. It'll be sunny and the winds will be from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. And overnight, it'll be mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. And sunrise will be at 6:03 a.m. and sunset at 7:40 p.m. And on Friday, there'll be a high of 76 degrees with a low of 61 degrees, and showers are likely in the morning. Then showers 70% likely, with a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Sunrise will be at 6:02 a.m. and sunset at 7:41 p.m. And on Saturday, there'll be a high of 73 degrees, with a low of 53 degrees, and it'll be partly cloudy. Sunrise will be at 6 a.m. and sunset at 7:42 p.m. And on Sunday, there'll be a high of 74 degrees with a low of 49 degrees, and it'll be mostly cloudy. There's a 60% chance of showers in the morning, then showers likely, with a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Sunrise will be at 5:59 a.m. and sunset at 7:43 p.m. I'll now take a short break and return with part two of today's reading of selections from the News Gazette for Wednesday, April 22, 2026, read by Janelle Eckerman. Please stay tuned.